Thank you. श्रीमद्भागवतामकी गौरभे मनंदी
Hare Krishna. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Nice to be back, as always. We will read from the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, Volume 2, entitled Planting the Seed, and describes Prabhupada's preaching activities in New York. Right now, I think we're towards the end of the book, so we're in 1966. Prabhupada rose early, despite having kept late hours the night before, and after the morning class, he was back in the kitchen. Now, half a dozen disciples sat in the front room making dough for puris and samosas. He had shown them how to make the dough, and Umapati, who kneaded for a while by pounding the soft dough with his fist, and Brahmananda, who was better at it, socking the weight of his wrestler's body onto the large lump of dough. This is the beginning of the kitchen movement. Prabhupada said that prasadam was one of the best weapons he had, because it's actually, he's not just feeding the stomachs of these people who are coming, but because it's prasadam, he's actually entering into their hearts a little bit. Sometimes they say, the person who rules the kitchen is the one who rules the home.
Oh.
So it's usually the wife. So it sets the present, the mood, the consciousness of the person cooking. Not to get too far on a tangent because I want to keep reading, but I remember when Nrisinga Kavacha was here, he's a minister of deity worship. And so he was really about punctuality and cleanliness and, you know, examining how we're doing things and, you know, making really good suggestions. And he was concerned because at that time, many of us were not second initiated. You know, we'd see first, but our spiritual master had taken a sabbatical. He had not been initiating for a number of years due to health reasons, you know. And he made an interesting point. He said that if you have a first initiated disciple and a second initiated devotee, you know, two different devotees, and one could do the worship on the altar and one could cook in the kitchen, he said better to have the more qualified person cook and have the less qualified person do the offering. Which I thought was a really interesting perspective. I never, you know, that goes sometimes contrary of how things are managed in temples, but I thought that was an interesting realization that he had brought, that, you know, it's a very intimate service. You know, Radha cooked for, this is Radharani's kitchen. You know, Yashoda cooked all like Krishna's dearmost associates. This was a very intimate service that they had done for him. So, anyway, I'll continue to read. As the Swamiji entered the room to examine the quality of the puris, his disciples looked up at him respectfully. They were always serious when he was present. He picked up a puri and examined it. "This is not to the standard," he said, "but it will have to do." Then, amid crumpled rejects and oddly shaped pieces of dough, he squatted down beside his helpers, who were trying as best as they could to make a mess. He took a small bowl of dough, held it flat with his fingers, and then deftly rolled it out and curled it around a wooden pin, and it fell off. And perfectly round puri. He held it up, displaying a translucent, thin, but not too thin, patty of dough. "Make it like this," he said, "but hurry." On discovering that the dough was too stiff, Swamiji added a little ghee and then a little milk and kneaded the dough to a softer texture. "Everything should be just right," he said, and his disciples took their menial tasks with concentrated earnestness. Who amongst them had ever heard of these things before? Puddies, samosas, it was all new. And the challenge was something very important. It was part of devotional service. Swamiji did much of the cooking as he simultaneously supervised his helpers. He was always near, walking barefoot back to the kitchen and then to the front room, then to his room in the rear. And even when he was in his back room, his disciples could see him through the window in the hall. Swamiji saw each of the nearly one dozen dishes through its final stages, and his disciples carried them in the front room in pots, one by one, and placed them before the picture of Lord Chaitanya. There was halva, dal, two sabjis, fancy rice, puris, samosas, sweet rice, apple chutney, and gulab jamuns or sweet balls, otherwise known as iskan bullets. Prabhupada had personally spent much time slowly deep frying the sweet balls on a low heat until they had turned golden brown and full. Then one by one he'd lift them out of the ghee with a slotted spoon and then place them in soak in sugar syrup. He recognized that these golden fat fried milk balls soaked with sugar water were his disciples' favorite prasadam treat. He called them ISKCON bullets because they were weapons in the war against Maya. Then even he allowed that a jar of ISKCON bullets floating in their syrup always be on hand in the front room where his disciples could take them without his permission or without observing any regulated hours. They could take as many as they liked. Kirtananda brought his samosa filling, which he had prepared from spinach and green peas cooked in paste, and the Swamiji had heavily spiced. Stuffing samosas was an art, and Swamiji showed them how to do it. He took a semicircle of dough, shaped it into a cone, and stuffed it with a spoonful of filling, and then folded it over and sealed it. A samosa was ready for the hot ghee. Achyutananda carried the imperfectly shaped puris into the kitchen, where he and Kirtananda deep fried them two at a time. And if the temperature of the ghee, the consistency of the dough, and the size and shape and thickness of the puris were just right, the puris would cook in only a few seconds, rising to the surface of the ghee, where they would inflate like little balloons. The cooks then stood on the edge of the cardboard box to drain off the excess ghee. As they completed the last preparation for the feast, Swamiji's disciples washed off the stiff dough from their hands and went down to the storefront, where they sat on straw mats, awaited the guests and feasts. Upstairs, Swamiji and a couple other cooks offered all the preparations to Lord Chaitanya, reciting the Parampara prayers. And I think we'll probably end here. I'll mark it. Sounds like they were preparing for one of the early Sunday love feasts. And just, again, so wonderful to see that the care and attention and love and encouragement that Srila Prabhupada gave to his disciples. You know, they were really teaching them everything. You know? Yeah, everything. Even simple things like how to prepare for prasadam.
Sweet balls are always gulab jamun.
Gulab jamun, yeah. Yeah, gulab jamun. Yeah. Everybody loves gulab jamun. It's how I saw my mother in prasadam. She wouldn't take prasadam, but she would take gulab jamun. So we'll begin to read from Srimad Bhagavatam. So we're in Canto 5, Chapter 10, Verse 22. I have an extra one if anybody needs a copy. Do you need a... Okay. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chava Narottamam. Devam Saraswatam Vyasam. Tato Jayam Udireyat. So again, we're reading from the fifth canto, chapter 10, verse 22. The verse starts with Stalagni Tapat Pasho Abhitapas. See? Okay. Stali Agni Tapat Payaso Bhitapas. Stali Agni Tapat Payaso Bhitapas. Tat tapatas tandula garba randihi. Tat tapatas tandula garba randihi. Dehindriya yavasya sani kashat. Tat samrishti purashasana nuradat. Stalagni tapat payasho bitapas. Tata patas tandula garpa randihi. Dehindriya vasyaya sani kashat. Tam srishti purusha sanu naradat. Stal agni tapat payasho bitapas. Tatapatas tandula garba randihi. Dehindriya svasaya sani kashat. Tat samrishta purasha shanu rodahat. Salangri tapat payasho vitapas. Tatapatas tandula garba randihi. Dehindriya vasaya sani kashat. Tat samsrishti purusha sanudarat. Sari agni tapat payasho vitapas. Tat tapatas tandula garbarandihi. Dehindriya svasaya sanikarshat.
Tat samstuti purusha shyanudo rodat.
Samsamstriti purusha sanu sarodarat. Stali on the cooking pot. Agni tapat.
Because of the heat of the fire.
Payasaha. The milk put into the pot.
The milk put into the pot.
Adi tapaha.
Adi tapaha.
Becomes hot.
Becomes hot.
Tat tapaha.
Tapaha.
Because of the milk's becoming hot.
Because of the milk becoming hot.
Tandula garba randihi.
Tandula garba randihi.
The center of the rice within the milk becomes cooked.
The center of the rice within the milk becomes cooked.
Deha indriya avashaya.
Deha indriya avashaya.
The bodily senses.
The bodily senses.
Sani karshat.
Sani karshat.
Having, from having connections with.
From having connections with.
Tam samsritihi.
Okay.
The experience of fatigue and other miseries.
The experience of fatigue and other miseries.
Purushasya.
Purushasya.
Of the soul.
Of the soul.
Anurodat.
Anurodat.
From compliance due to being grossly attached to the body, senses, and mind.
From compliance due to being grossly attached to the body, senses, and mind.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Abhay Chinavinda Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So translation, King Rahugana continued, "My dear sir, what you have said that designations like bodily fatness and thinness are not characteristics of the soul, that is incorrect because designations like pain and pleasure are certainly felt by the soul. You may put a pot of milk and rice within fire, and the milk and rice are automatically heated one after the other. Similarly, due to bodily pains and pleasures, the senses, mind, and soul are affected. The soul cannot be completely detached from this condition." Repeat. King Rahugana continued.
My dear sir,
you have said that designations like bodily fatness and thinness
are not characteristics of the soul.
That is incorrect.
That is incorrect.
Because designations like pain and pleasure
are certainly felt by the soul.
You may put a pot of milk and rice within fire,
and the milk and rice are automatically heated
one after the other.
Similarly,
due to the bodily pains and pleasures,
the senses, mind, and soul are affected.
The soul cannot be completely detached from this conditioning. Purport. This argument put forth by Maharaj Rahugana is correct from a practical point of view, but it arises from an attachment from the bodily conception. It can be said that a person sitting in his car is certainly different from his car. But if there is damage to the car, the owner of the car, being overly attached to the car, feels pain. Actually, the damage done to the car has nothing to do with the car's proprietor. But because the proprietor has identified himself with the interests of the car, he feels pleasure and pain connected with it. This conditional state can be avoided if attachment is withdrawn from the car. Then the proprietor would not feel pleasure or pain if the car is damaged or whatever. Similarly, the soul has nothing to do with the body or senses. But due to ignorance, he identifies with the body and he feels pleasure and pain due to bodily pleasure and pain. Om Ajnanasimilandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshu Unmalitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachamam Mangayate Hirin Yakripatam Aham Bhante Shubhu Dhanatayanam Vanchakalpa Trumbascha Kripasantu Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasari Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So again, I'll read the verse. Stalagni tapat payasho bitapas tatapatas tandula garbarandihi dehindriya pashaya sanir kashat sam sam sriti purusha sanun anuradat. King Rahugana continued, "My dear sir, what you have said, that the designations like bodily fatness and thinness are not characteristics of the soul. And that is incorrect, because designations like pain and pleasure are certainly felt by the soul. You may put a pot of milk and fire within rice, and the milk and rice are automatically heated due to one or the other. Similarly, due to bodily pains and pleasures, the senses, minds, and souls are affected. The soul cannot be completely detached from this conditioning." So, the very nice, very simple instructions offered by Jatavarta. On the one sense, were received by the king well. You know, when the king was chastising him and Jatavarta was saying, "Oh, this is how you're thinking, but this is the reality, you know, we're not this body," and so forth. Immediately, the king got off the palanquin, offered his obeisances, and said that you are a representative of Kapila Dev. you have a great sadhu. Please instruct me on what is the purpose of life. And he also said, "I am a very much a worldly attached person. I don't understand." So as he's presenting these objections, he's not doing so in a rebellious mood. He's not going, "Oh, you know, he's not being argumentative. He's revealing his doubts. And he's revealing his doubts because what Bharata is explaining to him is unknown to him. It's not his experience. Spiritual truths are not readily understood. It's said that amongst thousands of men, very few actually endeavor for what is perfect in life. Manashu sahasranam. And amongst those, very few actually attain perfection. And even amongst those who attain perfection, very few actually understand who God is. So spiritual truths are not readily understood by our material senses. It's a foreign concept because we are engaged in this world and we have Gyanindriya, we have all the senses, the hearing, tasting, smelling, and then we have Karmindriya, the senses of activity. And this is our engagement with the world, and for all of us who are conditioned, self-realization is not readily available. It is not accessible simply through speculation. There has to be some means by which we attain that realization. And that's what yoga is for. That's why we chant. First, ultimately, the purpose of chanting and bhakti yoga is for the pleasure of the personality of Godhead. With that comes self-realization. There are some yogic processes, jnana yoga, sangha yoga, that may endeavor for self-realization as a separate endeavor, but the beauty of Krishna consciousness, the beauty of bhakti yoga, is that everything comes with it. the realization of the paramatma, realization of the self, everything comes with bhakti. It's like getting the express route. You know, sometimes in buildings they have a stairway, but they also have elevators, but then they have express elevators. You know, like the really big wigs have like their express elevators that take them to the top floor. So we all have access to express elevator of realization, of spiritual realization. But for someone who has not had the good fortune of coming in contact with pure devotees and hearing these things and being immersed, it doesn't make sense. So Bharata has explained to his king that we're not this body. These things are simply material designations. But the king says, but when there's pleasure and there's pain, we feel it. We feel it. But is it really the soul that feels it? You know, the soul by nature is Satchit Ananda. It is eternal. It can never be cut. You know, Gita says it can never be cut, can never be dried, can never be burned, can never be moistened by water. It's not touched by the things of this world. And it is Chitta. So even though we may, and I certainly experience ignorance on a day-to-day basis, even though we may be covered by the material energy and we're in this clouded state, the soul by nature is Chitta. It is consciousness. It's pure. It's aware. It's knowing. And it is Ananda. So we experience, what we experience as pleasure in this world is simply a temporary cessation of pain. We may be hungry, and we may be feeling the pains of hunger. So we take some food, we feel some relief from that pain, and we think, oh, this is so pleasurable. But that's not Ananda. The Ananda of this quality of Ananda that's there in the soul, it is pure happiness. It is a sustainable, pure joy of the self. So for those who don't have this experience of Satchidananda, of the soul, and Krishna is Satchidananda Vigraha. He is the source. It said like a fire, sparks will come from a fire. And those sparks will have the same quality as fire, heat and light. Yeah. Similarly, the individual soul who is Vibhin Amsha, separated part and parcel of this personality of Godhead, we also have these qualities because Krishna is the embodiment of Satchidananda. He is the source of all existence. He is the source of all knowledge, and he is the source of all bliss. And so the individual soul comes from the personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada stressed this over and over and over in his preaching. And he always had this one phrase that I think is really important. Life comes from life. And it may sound very simple, dogmatic, but it's actually a very profound truth. Life comes from life. Life does not come from matter. Spirit does not come from matter. Matter is actually a degradation of the spiritual energy. But as spirit soul, we have our origin with the personality of Godhead. We're Vibhin Amsha. We're not products of the material energy or even the Brahma Jyoti. But we are part and parcel of the personality of Godhead. And to have that realization is a very, very, it's guhya, it's guhyam. Krishna says in Gita that this knowledge is guhyata, it's very confidential. What to speak of Paramatma realization? What to even speak of Bhagavan realization? What to even speak of the sweetness of Krishna's lila? Krishna's revelation of his sweet qualities, of sweet pastimes in Vrindavan is a very rare. In lifetimes, in the entirety existence of the universe, of all the passing of the ages, and the ages mark up the passing of the kalpas, and the passing of the kalpas mark up the days of Brahma. You know, so much time passes, but Krishna very rarely reveals this very sweet pastime of his. So King Rahugana, he's speaking from this conditioned state. He's speaking from a humble state of mind. He's not holding to it like, you're wrong, I'm right. You know, he's not being argumentative that way. But he's simply expressing a doubt. He's saying, what you're saying doesn't jive with my experience of this world. And therefore, Krishna advises Arjuna, Tadpiti pani patena pari prashnena sevaya upadekshate jnanam jnana tattva darshana, that one should approach a self-realized person and render service and inquire submissively. Such a person can impart knowledge unto you because they themselves have seen the truth. So this process of pari prashnena, of prashna. Prashna means inquiry. So there's a scripture called Prashna Upanishad, which is all questions and answers. And it's not that we simply inquire whimsically, like we want to show off how smart we are, you know, that we've read so much, or any such thing, or to even be argumentative. But if there's doubts within ourselves, if we're hearing these things, and there are doubts, something comes up and we go, it doesn't make sense to me. In this case, he's saying, you know, I can understand, okay, fat, then these physical things are not the self. But we experience pain, we experience pleasure. So therefore, I don't have realization of what it is that you're saying. And so for the king, he's expressing his doubt. He's expressing his misgivings. And this is actually what we need to do as serious sadhakas. You know, that if we read things, we hear things, we have some experience, something that causes us to have some doubt, we bring it before a person whom we have that confidential relationship with. Could be a spiritual master or a devotee who's senior to us, somebody who has some realization, and we lay it at their feet and say, this is my doubt, because if we don't, that doubt stays within us and doesn't get resolved. We just somehow try to work it ourselves and we go elsewhere. I remember, and this is kind of a sad story, my father had a very good friend, pretty remarkable gentleman. He was a young boy living in Paris during the Nazi occupation, and he was part of the resistance. He was a young man, 12, 13 years old, and he was a runner. He would take information that they had gathered in the city and bring it out to people who then would relay it to the troops fighting. Well, one day he got caught. And it was bad, but so this is a very remarkable gentleman. And as he got older, he began to have very strong abdominal pains. And so his wife said, you should go to a doctor. He said, okay, I'll go to a doctor. And he came back and she said, well, what did he say? He's like, well, he didn't know. And she's like, well, what's going to happen now? It's like, did you tell him about the pains? He's like, no, I'm not going to tell him. It's for him to figure out. Yeah, that was his response. Well, unfortunately, he didn't mean it. That thing which caused the pain was ultimately was a disease or condition that caused him to pass away younger than he should have. Somehow he expected the doctor to figure out that he had the stomach pain and to diagnose it and give him. Well, it would have been, I can understand why he wouldn't want to give up or divulge information to an authority figure so easily, given his life history. Still, it would have been wise for him to go to the doctor and say, look, I got stomach pains. I got pains awful. The doctor goes, oh, okay, well, let's examine your stomach. Let's take x-rays, let's do blood tests, whatever. But if you don't tell anybody. So King Rahugana, very wisely, he could have just said, oh, thank you very much, and that'd been the end of it. But since he didn't really understand what was being spoken to him, he expresses his misgivings, his doubts. And that will allow then, and we'll read further on, Jatabharata to address these misgivings. And for those who... and again, we can understand King Rahugana's inability to comprehend. But it also is very a good lesson for us that he took the opportunity to exchange. And this is actually the value of being in association with devotees, that we're hearing and we're inquiring. The process of hearing and inquiring. So I think I'll end here. It's almost 9 o'clock. Maybe give some room for any questions or comments.
This verse and the previous verse, they're making me wonder, how seriously do we take these designations of pain and pleasure, and fatigue and energy? Do we you say that it has nothing to do with the soul? But given we have these vehicles, you have to take it seriously to a certain extent.
Yeah.
To maintain oneself.
Yeah.
But it's sometimes difficult to draw a line.
Yeah.
And as a devotee doing a lot of service, mm-hmm. one's constantly exposed to these extremes.
Right.
Hunger and thirst and fatigue and energy.
Well, I think, you know, the analogy that Prabhupada makes his purport to a vehicle is very apropos. You know, if we have a vehicle, that's a very useful, handy utility in our lives. Mm. It gets us places. Mm. If you're doing service, you know, a devotee brought Ramapada Maharaj to the airport this morning. Krishna Leela, you know, he goes to the farmer's market and purchases foodstuffs for the deities. So this human body is valuable because the human birth and the intelligence that comes with the human body gives us the opportunity to inquire, to go beyond the animal propensity of eating, sleeping, mating, defending, which all involve the senses. You know, the senses are there for the body, so the body can maintain itself. But why are we maintaining the body?
To do service.
So why do we maintain the body? Well, we maintain the body because the body is an important vehicle. You know, it's like if a father gives his son a car keys to the car, and he said, okay, here are the keys. You know, please, you know, drive your brother to school. You know, you actually would be, I find that when I'm driving someone else's car, I'm much more careful with it than when it was my own car. You know, so these bodies aren't our bodies. If we think that they're our bodies, then that's the beginning of material consciousness. But when we realize that these bodies are Krishna's bodies, things like the senses, you know, like the pain and pleasure that we experience, they pass. The saying, you know, the old saying, this too shall pass. Everything passes. You know, we may be feeling some pain, but that will pass. We may be feeling some happiness, material happiness, but that will pass. But the soul is eternal. And so we engage in the senses in this world naturally because we are in these bodies and we're engaging these worlds. That's how we function in life. It doesn't mean that we should, some cultures, they believe that the pain and pleasures of this world are the cause of bondage. So therefore, they make the food bland. You know, like this is like the Protestant ethic of, you know, the Northern European mindset. You know, they have these beautiful desserts, but they have no flavor to them. But how does that help in spiritual life? You know, if you know, ultimately, we have to find the true happiness within. And so we can't become... So the car has needs. We have to, you know, put gas in. We have to change the oil. We have to fill the tires. You hear that kind of crunching noise. Oh, we got to fix the brakes. You know, all these things that come with maintaining the vehicle. But we don't become so attached. And I know some people who had really, really, you know, the cool car, and they were so attached to it, so attached to their vehicles that eventually, when something does happen to the vehicle, they're devastated. And they grieve. I mean, it almost like ruins their lives in some cases because they become so... And from our perspective, we go, oh, that's absurd. How absurd to become so obsessed with the car and so involved with it that when the car, like all vehicles, eventually meets its demise, that they're grieving for an inanimate object. But we do the same with the body. We do the same thing with our body. We fear death to the point where we don't realize that this is just the natural phase of the body. You know, as all beings are born, we have a life, hopefully, and then we meet our end. And so it is not so much that we should neglect or minimize the needs of others and so forth. But we can't become so attached we blind ourselves to the higher truth, the deeper truth. So there are many organizations out there that have very good food distribution programs. You know, here in Boston, you know, we were for a number of years, we tried to start a Food for Life program. but there's Food Not Bombs. There's so many of these really, really effective food distribution organizations that it was hard to get a niche, get a foothold. But are they distributing prasadam? See, here we read about Prabhupada. He's distributing prasadam. He's engaging his disciples in preparing offerings to Krishna, and they offer it to Lord Chaitanya. And with that, it's not only they're satisfying the senses of the tongue and the taste and satisfying the belly, but they're satisfying the soul. Does that answer your question? I want to make sure I'm addressing your question adequately.
So you know, it's this transformation of consciousness that I'm hoping that it will completely overwhelm me at some point. But one story that seems to help me is the one of Lord Chaitanya and Sanatana Goswami.
Mm.
Sanatana Goswami had that disease.
Mm. And, leprosy, wasn't it?
It was repulsive. And he said, I don't know. I can't go on like this. This is terrible. Mm. Nobody wants to be with me. I'm just an aberration here. I'm a disturbance to everyone. Therefore, I'm going to end my life.
Right.
He attempted to throw himself in front of the the Jagannath cart as it was going by. And Lord Chaitanya stopped him and said, no, you have no right to throw yourself in front of that cart because your body belongs to me.
Yeah. That's a very good passage.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, yeah.
So we really don't know how much time we have left and how many more Bhagavatam classes and how many more meals and prasadam we're going to eat. But it's really, the whole thing is up to Krishna at this point.
That's actually one of the reasons why we mark our body with tilak. Because we're saying, Krishna, this is yours, this is yours, this is yours, this is yours, this is yours. This is yours, this is yours, this is yours. All the senses are an entire being. You know, my body is a temple for you. It's not a place of enjoyment. So, that's a very nice story. Thank you. So I think we'll end here. Grantarad Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Srila Abhay Charivinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada ki. I'm not the coach if I should have done it.